For our lesson, we pick up with problem number 2. This is on lesson 13. We're dealing with some of the issues that Jesus faced during his life. If you look at the Lord's life and you try to consider all the problems that a person may encounter, the different categories, in today's world, you could have some electronic problems with the computer. You could have some problems at work. You could have some problems around the house as far as fix-it projects. When you look at Jesus' life, though, which category would you pick as far as where he faced the most challenges and problems?
People.
Yeah, I think that's it. Whether that was from the religious officials, whether that was from his disciples, whether that was from some people that he was trying to teach and they didn't understand, people problems. When you look at our life today, we can, as I said, have problems in all kinds of categories, but where do people problems generally relate for us? High or low?
Low.
I think
down
lower. The reason I think that is because we're so involved in the media and things today that there's people on the media and things, but it's also our computers, it's our stereo sets, those kind of things. Seem to take more of our time with our neighbors or our family.
It has lessened our contact with people. So if you look at it from the standpoint of how much contact we have with people, it's maybe not quite to the point of where we're like on a desert island, but we do have more limited contact than we've had in the past, especially the last 10 or 20 years. And when you do have that contact, whether it's more limited or not, generally we still have some of the same issues that Jesus had. We have times, occasions where we have people problems, whether that's at work. We may not work necessarily with anybody or too many people, but if we're in an environment where we have a factory situation, we have an office situation, we're dealing with customers, whatever that might be, we have people issues. And sometimes in a store, same deal. Well, when you look at this lesson, we're really talking about some people issues that Jesus had. Last week, if you were here, we talked about people issues from the standpoint of humility, pride. Especially with the apostles, Jesus had some issues with trying to get the apostles on board. And tonight on page 13, we're going to look at some more people problems. The first one, he doesn't really title it except a second issue. I think, though, that a good title might be disappointment. Jesus was sometimes disappointed in people. And he gives a specific example of that being Peter. He says, right there under that first heading, suppose you or we have a friend who is just burning up with zeal for the cause which you or we hold dear. He's not afraid to speak up and defend your cause and seems willing to make any sacrifices necessary to uphold your ideals. So if you have a friend like this, and I think most of us can probably point to someone, maybe at least a handful of people who would be thinking in these terms, how good of a friend do we think that would be? Here's a person that supports you, believes in what you're doing, and encourages you. I mean, we're thinking, hey, I like you as a friend. Maybe you are a best friend. We're on the same page, so to speak. So the writer goes on to say, you confide in him. You bring him into your inner circle of friends. He believes so strongly in your philosophy of life that he says, friend, you can do what? You can always count on me. How many have ever had someone say, you can always count on me? Day, night, on vacation, asleep, you can count on me. All you have to do is ask. Well, have you ever gone to ask that friend for help and you didn't get help? Anybody ever had that experience? Well, a couple of us have. What'd you hear from the friend?
It's not going to work today.
Yes, if I were not so busy, I'd do it. Any other day would be fine, but today you just caught me on a bad day. Now, that could be true. I mean, he's in the hospital or something, so he's not able to come and help you reshingle your roof. But, I mean, generally speaking, if a person makes that kind of commitment, you're thinking, unless you're in the hospital, unless you're over in a foreign country or something, if you really mean that, then you will try to be there when I need you. Continuing, he says, I will even die for you. We probably don't hear that too often, but some people have made that kind of commitment. Well, as you know, Jesus had a friend like that. His name was Cephas or Peter. That name, of course, means a stone. Most of the time, he was like a stone. He really had strong convictions and stood by them. He too said that he would never deny the Lord, even if he should have to die for him. So the Lord has someone who comes along and makes this kind of commitment. Maybe the other disciples at various times, we do know of at least one occasion where I believe it was Thomas who said, you're going to go to Jerusalem, you know, you're going to die, let's just go with him. So it seems that at least a couple of the disciples had this type of commitment for the Lord. Well, Jesus' outspoken condemnation of the chief priests, the scribes, and the Pharisees made him quite unpopular among some people. He talked about their hypocrisy. He talked about them having a very superficial faith. They, of course, were people who had great influence, great power, and they were very determined to destroy him. When you look at Peter, moving to the middle of the paragraph, he continued to follow the Lord. He certainly intended to remain faithful to him. But when the multitude came to take Jesus, what did Peter do? Drew out the sword, cut off whose ear? Servant of the high priest, who was the name of that man? Malchus. And then Jesus, of course, restored the man's ear. Peter followed from afar off. Soon he was sitting among Jesus' enemies, and when a certain maid saw him, she said, this man was also with him. Peter said, woman, I know not. Can you think of some times today when friends disappoint us? Maybe it's not quite to the level here, but in trying to kind of identify with what we have here about the Lord, we thought someone was going to stand by us, stand up for us, help us, and the person just basically said no. Disappointments in life when it comes to friends.
I think one of the ones for me is when you think you've got a connection with somebody, whether it's family or friend, and you want to be there for them, but they don't let you in to let you know that I'm having a hard time, that they will let you help them. So it can be, you know, that way too.
Yeah, it's not...
It hurts your feelings when you find out that they were in tough straits and they never notified you to, you know, whether it's to borrow your car or take you to an appointment or whatever, but people sometimes let you down because they don't let you in and let you help them.
Yeah, he doesn't deal with that in this lesson, but that's a great point to make, because oftentimes we're just focused on how others have disappointed me because they didn't help. They refused to help. But here's someone who wants to help, and the person doesn't allow the helper in. That's the point that you're making, and that's right. It does cut both ways. But oftentimes we don't consider, and that's unfortunate, but we don't consider the point that you made, so that's very good.
It happened, we were, whether you like unions or not, we were in a bread company, and we were voting in a union because they were basically extorting our labor. And they all said they were going to back it. And when it came down to it, I think two backed me, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And job was short-lived.
Yeah. Well, you think you've got support. And then all of a sudden, when you go to pull from that support or use that support, the rug's been pulled out from underneath you.
The sad thing is they all said they wanted it. They all got you. Said, I'm not going to do this because this could cost me my job. If you really want it, then we'll do it.
Mm-hmm. Related to that, too, you ask a person, I know that this may not be something that you want to do. You may not be comfortable doing this. So, I mean, I'm giving you an out. I just need to know whether or not you're going to be with me or not. So if you don't want to do this, that's fine. We'll still be friends. No problem. But I do need to make sure that I can depend on you. Oh, yeah, yeah, no problem. But it's happened more times than we care to think. What else? Disappointment when it comes to friends. Any other illustrations? Right.
I had one. Fella accused me of doing something, and we went into a store. He was yelling at me. We went into a store, and I spoke to one of the clerks in there that I knew fairly well, and he turned to that clerk. He said, you know this guy? I do. You know, we'd known each other 3 or 4 years. Fairly, we see each other on a fairly regular basis. Now, we were not real close, mm-hmm. but it wasn't as if the person...
You were strangers, close. Yeah. Yeah, people can disappoint us in big ways. And when we look at Peter and Jesus, we certainly have a great example of that. So good additional illustrations. That next paragraph, which is smaller, we're going to pull from Luke chapter 22, verse 61. We'll also look at verse 62. The question he asked, the second question, is answered by 62, but it doesn't give that verse. So head somebody over there, Luke chapter 22, 61 and 62, and we'll also take a look at the book of Mark, Mark chapter 16 and verse 7. Doug, you want to be a reader? Okay. Let's get you lined up for Luke 22, 61 and 62. Mark 16, verse 7. We'll also follow with that one. Mark 16, verse 7. Steve, is that you? Thank you. Mark 16, 7. All right, Doug, back to you. Luke 22, let's start with 61.
And the Lord turned and looked upon Peter. And Peter remembered the words of the Lord, how that he said unto him, before the cock crow this day, thou shalt deny me thrice.
Okay, let's fill in our blank and then think about the answer. From Luke's account, what did the Lord do? Peter denies him. The Lord responds by doing what? Looks at him. Looks upon him. When we think about a friend disappointing us, and maybe we can even better develop the thought by looking at it from the perspective of a non-Christian, how do people respond sometimes when it comes to a friend who's deeply disappointed them? friend has broken his word. I'll always be with you. I'll always help you whenever you need something, and you really need something. Friend fails. Or to go back and use the reverse, sort of with Bonnie's illustration. Prince, I'll call you if I need something, and you find out they were in a hospital or whatever, and they never called. How do people deal with that kind of disappointment?
Sometimes it ruins friendships.
All right. It's not discussed. People just think, I'm not going to give you a second chance. You made this promise, or you said this or that. You didn't follow through. I'm through with you. So that happens. Okay. What else?
They're miffed.
All right. And because they're miffed, they might launch into some kind of verbal assault. Why, you said you promised, and I knew that you were no good from the beginning. I knew I couldn't trust you. Jesus' reaction is a little different. He just looks at him. But you know, sometimes a look, maybe from a man, but especially from a woman. A woman's look, you think that can be like the picture that paints 1,000 words?
2,000.
Maybe 10. I'll just bail you out a little bit. Maybe 10,000 words. But it can. You know, women, especially in the child-rearing years, have talked about the mom look and so forth, or the statement, if looks could kill. Men can do that, but I think women are probably better at it. Maybe that's a sexist comment. I don't know. But anyway, I personally do believe that women are able to offer some looks which do say a lot. And to me, that seems to be what Jesus did here. He gave him a look, and that look was sufficient to remind Peter of the promises and to convict him of what he had chosen to do. Verse 62. Doug, if you'll continue.
And he went out and wept bitterly.
Okay. Jesus didn't have to launch into a long discussion as far as, well, Peter, you know, 60 days ago or whenever it was, you made this promise and now you've broken it and you should have been faithful to your word. Sometimes just a look. Is there a lesson in there implied for us? Well, I think from Peter's standpoint, that would be a good lesson. Anything else that we can extract from this?
You don't have to throw a big fit to be effective.
I think that's the other thing, and especially if somebody has disappointed you. Sometimes less is more, I guess you might say, and that was sufficient for Jesus, and it had a great, great impact on Peter. So that's another very practical lesson. Then this, he takes this to another step. We try to develop a little more fully, and I think this is also very, very good. The Lord did not count Peter as a total failure. The man, that's Peter, simply weakened during a time of great stress and danger, but he had the courage to try again. The Lord knew he could still use this great man as a proclaimer of truth, and when he rose from the dead and the angel spoke to the woman at the tomb, the message given by the angel shows that Jesus had not given up on Peter. Mark 16, verse 7. Let's fill in the blank. Steve?
Go your way, tell his disciples, Peter, that he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him, and he said unto you.
Okay. The name that we want in the blank would, of course, be Peter. And Jesus redeems Peter. Well, to go back to what I think Doug said just a minute ago, if a person lets us down, or maybe, I don't remember who that was, but the person talked about you disrupted the friendship for life. You were needed in this set of circumstances. You let me down. We're no longer friends. I know that I can't trust you. And people start getting into a lengthy thing. Well,
you get a second chance.
Yeah.
Or third. Or
fourth. And we're going to see that when we deal with the next page as well. If we had the circumstances reversed, if we were the one who'd made a promise, I will always help you, I'll always stand there with you, and so forth, and we broke our word. And we felt badly about it, just like Peter. But if a person responded to us in the way that I just outlined, I'm never going to forgive you, you really hurt me, this was a time where I needed help unlike I've ever needed before, and you were not there for me. What would we want? Would we not want, Bonnie?
We should be just like Christ is, how he forgives us over and over and over. We should be the same way with our friends.
Yeah, and we recognize that the roles could have been reversed and we might have been the one that broke the word. And then, too, you also find in some of those cases where a person was not able to do what he or she promised to do. And the person that was let down, do you think he or she, and at least in some cases, is not willing to consider why the friend was unable to follow through? It doesn't matter. I don't care if you weren't feeling well. The help I needed, you should have come anyway, since you were sick. I don't care that you're out of town. You should have made some other arrangements. So this relates to many of the other items that we see in the Bible. The person who was let down, where does the focus shift or not shift when those times come? Isn't it on self? I needed, I wanted, I was promised, this was something that was owed to me, and who didn't get what they needed? It was me. It's the I problem. So if you have those cases where somebody has disappointed you, once again, it's a person-related issue, and try to look at those times, try to put yourself in the other place, and if we do that, we might find that had the roles been reversed, we would have done the exact same thing. Now, maybe the person who couldn't help you was asked, and the person said, I'll try to get some other arrangements in place for you. Nope, I need you. And we might not have even gone that far had the roles been reversed. So this is something about which we should be very, very careful. Anything you want to add or ask as we turn the page? All right. Looking at the top of the next page, the writer asks this question. Would we have forgiven a person like Peter? Would we have welcomed him back into our confidence and fellowship? It was Peter who asked Jesus on one occasion, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Till seven times seven? What did the Lord say? Matthew chapter 18, verse 22. All right, 70 times seven, you may have a slightly different answer based on the translation that you use, but that's what the Lord was talking about. As I consider this, one of the stories that comes to my mind from the Bible is in Luke chapter 15. We don't know much about the son that left his dad, but if it was a normal household, a good household, and when you look at the dad, how he responded to the son, I think that you can infer that it was a good household. Do you think that the son made some promises to dad over the years as he was growing up in that home? Dad, what'll I do?
Always love you.
I'm going to always love you. Dad, can you depend on me? Yes, I'm not going to try to disappoint you. I'm going to, try to be a good son. He leaves. He's gone for a long time. Comes back, and how does dad react to the son who may have said, I love you, I'll always be there with you, and if you need anything, count on me? You think the son broke his dad's heart? Yeah. Comes back, you can imagine probably how he smelled, how he looked, had nothing, squandered a good part of what dad had, what dad had given him. And yet, what's the dad do? Go sleep in the barn for 6 months. I'll talk to mom and see if he can come back in half a year. Dad runs to him. Throws his arms around him. Get the ring. Get some shoes. We're going to take good care of you. You're going to come back into the house tonight. And you're not going to be a hired servant. My son was lost. Now he's found. Can you imagine what that would do to a friendship? Someone has let you down. And they come. The head is hung low. They know they've disappointed you. Don't want to face you. And yet, you as an individual, you're going to say, I love you so much. I might not have responded as well as you did. And yeah, you weren't there for me, but that's okay. I love you. I believe that next time, when I need to call, it's going to work out. And you are still my best friend. Can you imagine the impact that that would have on a person who's failed you, let you down? It's going to take that bond that was close, and now it's going to tighten it even more.
Well, second chance and something like that, to forgive them and move on.
Yeah, and that's right. If you are married for very long, do you think that you're going to find that same kind of thing? A spouse is going to let you down? Unless you're really unusual, the answer to that question is going to be yes. And it may feel like, you were sick or you had locked yourself out of the car and called the mate and said, hey, I need car keys. And the spouse said, well, I'll be there by the end of the day or something. And you're thinking, well, you let me down. I want to go get lunch or whatever it might be or head back home. So there will be these disappointments in life as we go through different relationships. But if we can't learn to forgive, can't learn to, as Judy said, go back and try to address that in a good way, a lot of those relationships that don't need to be ruined and destroyed will end up being destroyed. Anything else that you want to add or ask before we go to the next section? Ray?
Jesus' answer to Judas was a little bit different.
Yeah.
Jesus said to him, are you going to betray me with a kiss? Mm-hmm. I think that one was pretty well settled. where with Peter, it was not settled beforehand. So Peter really promised to do good, but Judas had made a promise to do bad.
When you come to situations like this, you always have to, and this is true for many areas of life, whether it's worship or that, you have to look at intent. And there are some people who are just intent on using your good graces to betray, to break promises, to be unfaithful, and it is a consistent pattern. If you're dealing with that kind of thing, and you very well are in certain matters, then that's going to require a different treatment. That is, you either need to repent and really change your views and actions for a long, long time. Otherwise, we're going to have to go down a very different road. But that's different, as you well know, from someone who messes up, and that's not their pattern. But they just fail at times.
See Peter's facial expression, they knew that he was repenting. Right,
yes.
Away.
Yeah. But sometimes you're right. We do have people on the other side of the fence, and then we're dealing with a different kettle of fish, no doubt. Anybody else? All right, our next section, let's deal with the third problem. That's going to tie in with what Ray talked about just a moment ago, and that's betrayal. So you do have some cases where a person messes up, they fail us, but then you have some other cases where a person heads down a completely different road, and that requires a different response. With the text, he says, it would really hurt for a friend to say, I don't even know that person, would it not? This was a terrible thing for a disciple of Jesus to do. But there was something much worse than the Apostle Peter's denial. And that, of course, comes from the life of Judas. He was another of the Lord's disciples, and he betrayed Jesus. He had gone to the chief priests and said to them, and here's where we get into Matthew 26, verse 15, also Matthew 26, 16. Then we'll look at the next chapter, Matthew 27, 4, and then we'll go back to Matthew chapter 26, verse 50. Is there somebody that would like to pull from Matthew 26, Matthew 27, and then back to Matthew chapter 26? All right, Bonnie, if when you find Matthew 26, you'll start reading with verse 15, 26, 15.
And said unto them, what will you give me? And I will deliver him unto you. And they covenanted with him for 30 pieces of silver.
Okay, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I believe, in the Sunday morning class. When you look at the 30 pieces of silver, that seems to be equivalent to about 3 months' wages. Today, maybe not looking at it from a Christian standpoint, but what evil do you think that people would be willing to commit for 3 months' pay? 12 paychecks for a person. What do you think some people would be willing to do for that? All right. I think they'd kill for a lot less than that. Let's just take, let's just use a good round number, $1,000 a week. $12,000. What do you think people would do for $12,000? I think they'd kill for $12,000. There'd be some people that would do that. What else? All right, I think they would be willing to tell a lie for $12,000. I'll tell two lies for $12,000. Or they'd be willing to steal. You find that. Sometimes it's just $100 they're willing to steal for. What else?
I think I knew a fellow one time that burned his house down to collect the insurance money. Never did find out for sure whether he did or not. He died shortly after that.
Yeah. Sometimes people are looking for the big payout, but still, $10,000 or $12,000 for a lot of, especially if it would be drug money or something else. But 3 months' pay, people will do a lot of things for. That's a little difficult for me to envision Judas with all of the things that he'd seen, all the things that he'd heard being with Jesus, that he would be willing to sell out the Lord for 3 months' pay. But that's what the Bible says. So he really had a heart issue at this particular point in time. And then, Bonnie, if you look at Matthew 26, see what we have in verse 16.
And from that time, he sought opportunity to betray him.
Okay. Now, here's one other little detail that I find to be kind of fascinating. If Judas had been forced into this somehow, for example, the officials were able to blackmail Judas, and we're going to give you $12,000 to deliver up Jesus, maybe I could be a little more understanding. Perhaps a little more sympathy in my mind could be offered to the guy. There's really no basis for sympathy, but at least I might understand that a little bit better. But here he gets the 3 months' pay or thereabouts. And what's the Bible say? He sought opportunity. So this was something that he was actively involved in. He wasn't pushed into it in any way. He goes to them, and now he's seeking out an opportunity to betray the Lord.
It was premeditated.
Yes, it was. And
he went to them.
Yeah. Our law recognizes a difference as far as crimes. It could be something that's done in the heat of the moment. There is no premeditation. But if it is premeditation, then as far as I know, every statute or virtually every statute allows for a greater sentence there's going to be greater punishment with premeditation. But yeah, it was premeditated. And it wasn't that he had this plan and then thought, well, I'm going to back off. I think it's a bad move. But he only tries to take the money back after the betrayal has occurred.
It's interesting when you read about this. It's like we almost don't get the full story. Because when it comes to the betrayal, the Jews, the high priest knew who Jesus was. They seen him teaching everybody. So was the betrayal more they just led him to the place where Jesus was at most of the time so that they could find him in a bigger city? You know, because like I said, these Jews knew where Jesus was at. They could have got him any time during the day. And even Jesus even said it. He said, you can take me back at this point. So how was he, trying to figure out exactly how the betrayal actually was? Was it just that he turned him over to the Jews? Technically, did he turn him over to the Jews? Or, you see what I'm trying to say here?
I believe I do. Let's take Carol's thought, and then I'll respond to you based on what she
contributes. Well, I was just going to say, they were afraid to take him in public because the people liked him so much, they were afraid of their anger. And I've always thought, and I could be very wrong, I always thought that the betrayal was that Judas took them to a place where he would be in private, where he would be basically unprotected, or, you know, more liable to be taken without a big incident.
It's like giving up a position in the military.
Yeah. If the Jews had wanted, I mean, they were not dumb by any means. So if they had wanted, they could have certainly paid some man to serve as a spy. They could have had a group of people ready, you know, 24/7, maybe had a couple groups and 12 hours watching on this shift and the next 12 hours watched by a second group of people. And the spy could have come back and said, look, he's here and now is a good time to take him. So that certainly would have been one way, one method to approach the Lord. But you've got Judas coming and making this offer. And if I were an official and I were interested in getting rid of Jesus, I mean, I'm thinking, hey, even if you had some of the other plans, you're thinking, now, there's this guy. He's one of the close ones as far as a follower of Jesus. He knows where they're going. He knows the ins and outs. So it's not just a spy, but we've got an insider that's willing to work with us. So from a common sense perspective, I would have jumped on that in a heartbeat. And if he would have wanted a year's worth of wages, if I'd really wanted Jesus dead, I would have paid up. Maybe even up to 10 years' wages, I would have paid up. Because here's a problem, Jesus, if I'm looking at this as an authority, and we've got now an easy way to take him out. Militaries typically still think like that. What's going to be the easiest way to accomplish the mission? And in this case, he would know when and where, and then you can just get the group together, call them together, and go in and take him. So that's how I kind of read that. I think Carol's exactly right, though, on her point.
I'd say they probably provided information about things he was saying about the Old Testament, too, compared to what Jesus was teaching. So they might have got more information than just...
That's true.
...he was put up, you know, were leading them to him.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, when you look at it in terms of some of the people the military is now battling with, you can send in scouts and get some information. But if you've got somebody within the enemy network that's willing to come over and give you the ins and outs, troop movements, where they're weak, those kinds of things, that's, as you well know, being ex-military, that is the best way to go. And when they saw that, that looked like surely a golden opportunity.
But John 6, verse 70 says, and Jesus answered them, have I not chosen you 12, and one of you is a devil?
Yeah.
So Jesus knew.
Yes, he did.
And it was probably, wasn't it all in the plan, but one of his own?
As you look at verse 64 in that same chapter, Bonnie, but the end of the verse, 664. For Jesus knew from the beginning who they were that believed not and who it was that should betray him. So, with the Lord being man, fully, and the Lord also being fully deity, he knew the choice that Judas was going to make. Now, as far as I can tell, Judas was, we've talked about this a little bit in the Acts class, that he was numbered with the apostles, as we see from Acts chapter 1, verses 20 through 26. And, you know, the Bible says he went to his own place. He did make that choice at a later time to head off into wrongdoing. But the Lord had it planned out as far as who the most effective men were going to be based on the choices that they were going to make. All right, let's go back here to where we left off. And that's going to be on page 14 looking now at Matthew chapter 27, verse 4. Matthew, Bonnie, you still want to read?
Okay,
Matthew 27, 4.
Saying, I have sinned in that I have betrayed the innocent blood. And they said, what does that do? See thou to that.
Okay, they didn't care. All they wanted was the Lord, and that's who they were able to get. So when we see the Lord's blood described here, how is it described? What kind of blood?
Innocent.
Innocent blood. So it's interesting that Judas made that admission. He's the one who, as he looks at what he's done, feels the guilt, recognizes and admits that he's been involved in having a part with taking the Lord's life. And then, of course, throws down the money and then goes out and hangs himself. Let's see Matthew 26. Let's go back there one chapter, Bonnie, if you would, and look at verse 50. Although Jesus knew these trying times would come upon him, kind of talked about that a little bit from John chapter 6, he kept his composure. Matthew 26, 50. Okay, I find this to be one of the more interesting verses in the life of Judas. Jesus addresses Judas by what word?
Friend.
Well, how would you or how would you not understand that word? Oh, friend.
Sarcastic.
You could understand it as sarcasm.
Oh, I was supposed to be his friend.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think sarcasm could be included in there. Anything else?
Make it sting a little?
Maybe. Any other thoughts? Sarcasm? Make it sting?
Well, if he needed to be brought forth to begin this chain of events in a certain way, then he's not going to want to raise any red flags now. If, you know, to fulfill the prophecy, certain things had to happen, and so he's just going to be calm and go along with it.
Yeah. We're back to that word composure. When Jesus dealt with someone who was not interested in the best for him, he deals with it in a calm, collected manner. There is, in my mind, a great lesson in that. You deal with someone who has let you down as a friend, someone who has disappointed you perhaps in the worst possible way. Someone from the world is probably going to respond to that kind of situation in what way? What we hear from the person who's of a secular mindset.
Hysteria.
Why you? And you can just imagine the beating on the table and the flailing of the hand and the escalation in the voice, and I hate you, and but yet Jesus, he's betrayed by one of the closest people that he had contact with in the first century. Friend, again, there could have been some sarcasm there. There could have been the sting that was mentioned, but he's calm, he's cool, he's collected. And isn't that a message which is consistent with the entire New Testament as far as how we deal with people? Speech, which is always seasoned with salt. Watch your words. So there are times where it can be very distressing as far as how we respond to someone, a set of circumstances. But again, that calmness, that coolness, that collectedness, that should be our primary goal in those kinds of circumstances.
Kind of reminds me of one of the verses where, you know, Judas was around him and he was the apostle's friend. It wasn't until, you know, he was all part of that and they had other people seen him as his friend. It reminds you of the how much opportunity Christ was giving him, maybe, to change his mind.
Yeah.
Still call him friend, still, like you said, the way he spoke to him. You still have a chance to not do this, Judas. It could happen another way. We knew it wasn't going to, from what is written. Mm-hmm. But Jesus still gave him opportunity.
Yeah.
So it kind of reminds you of the verse where he says, no sin has taken you that you can't get away from. You know, God has given you the strength to get out of it. And so he was given that time, and he refused to use that strength.
Yeah. Jesus gave him the 70 times 7. He loved him to the end, and there was an opportunity. But now he kind of shows up and says, okay, if this is going to be your choice, then you do have the free will to do that. But he gave him every opportunity to head down a different path, and he refused.
Same example we have in the church today, too. You can only do so much for individuals before you have to say, this is all we can do.
Yeah. Well, and to go back to Ray's point earlier, as far as the person who is not willing to repent, the person who is messed up seriously, but he's not the habitual offender who's just trying to be in the betrayer category time after time after time. So hopefully we're going to do very well as far as when it comes to forgiving people who disappoint us and let us down. But when we do find people in that other group, then okay. And that's what Jesus did. If he was going to head off in that direction, then the Lord let him take his due medicine. And that's what happened. Anybody else? Okay, let's pick up a few other things here. We've got about 7 minutes left. He asked the question just before problem number four. Why could Jesus bear the insults of his enemies, the forsaking of his friends, and even the betrayal of a disciple? And the answer is because he had something to a degree far greater than our comprehension, far beyond it. That is, love. Love does not hold grudges nor brood upon injuries. Truly, it seeks not its own, is not easily provoked, and does not think evil. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5. And that is, I think, the right answer for us as we go through those times. But that's always the challenge, to love the unlovable. We've talked about before the fact that agape love is loving people who seem to be unlovable, the people who seem to have no redeeming quality, the people who are just ugly, not physically, but ugly internally, ugly spiritually, ugly by their behavior, ugly by their characteristics. When you look at our world right now, it does not have, by my understanding, by my reflection, much agape love. If you don't agree with somebody in today's world, how are you treated? You can see it with the presidential candidate. Somebody says something, Trump is probably the most outspoken one right now among all the candidates. And if you listen to House, whether you like him or not, that's not related to the point. But people hear him make a statement, or President Obama, sometimes you can look at it from that perspective. People hear one of those men make a statement, and they don't like it. And how do they respond? I mean, it is just absolute hate. They come out with all the claws. And there is no room for disagreement. There is no room for dissent. And it's just, it's either my way or the highway. We hate you. We wish you were dead. And it's just vicious as far as some of the speech. And I think as the world gets further and further away from some of the Christian teachings, whether they're directly familiar with the Bible or they just see that influence, it's going to be a lot more vicious. And even some people who profess to be Christians but are not really trying to follow the plan, so to speak. Anybody see the elected official that got sworn in on the Quran? Am I the only one who saw that? That was within the last day and a half. I can't give you the exact date. But there were some Bible-believing people that, at least that was what they professed. And as I looked at some of the comments, I mean, it was beyond vicious. You know, there were death threats against the lady and just some really ungodly statements from people who profess to believe the Bible. So just unbelievable as far as where we are in the world. Problem number four, let's look at the bottom of page 14. It must have been difficult to bear up under the strain of being denied by one disciple and betrayed by yet another. Could there be anything worse? Excuse me. Yes, being rejected by the Jewish people could be worse. Peter was the only man, and he did repent and rededicate his life to Jesus' work. Judas was only one man, and it is indeed sad that he died in the manner he chose. Think, though, how difficult it would be to be rejected by most of the Jews, his own people. Now let's consider some of the scriptures dealing with the rejection. I want to see if we can finish this lesson out. Many years before the Lord was born, Isaiah, this is from chapter 53, made a prophecy. He said, he is despised and he is rejected when it comes to men. He's a man of sorrows. He's acquainted with grief. Now, Isaiah didn't specify why all those things would be true, but based on what we looked tonight, looked at the information tonight, do you think the people problems that Jesus had would relate to Isaiah 53, verse 3? You're despised, you're rejected, you're not treated well by one of your own disciples, not understood necessarily by them all the times. So verse 4 goes on to say, surely he's borne our griefs, he's carried our sorrows, yet we did esteem him what? Stricken, smitten of God, and then afflicted. Verse 6 of Isaiah 53, all we like sheep have gone astray. We've turned everyone to his own way. The Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. It would take a strong person to suffer rejection while bearing at the same time the iniquities of those doing the rejecting. In no sense was Jesus a weakling, as some artist concepts of him might indicate. He was. So when we have people problems, the Lord is certainly able to identify with what we experience. The general public, he says, is not and never has been well-informed. Therefore, a little persuasion from some talented, smooth-tongued speaker can sway unthinking people this way or that way. You think that's true? especially in today's culture, it's amazing how Americans will shift. Somebody says something and the weight swings over this way. Somebody makes another claim and they swing over this way. And we are like a ship without a rudder, as you look at our society. Pumped full of prejudice and misrepresentations by the chief priests, elders, and Pharisees, the people of Jesus' day believe what they were told. Do you think that's still true, especially when it comes to religion? Yes. If there's a man who's dressed up and maybe has a big cross hung around his neck and he says the world is flat or Jesus is coming tomorrow, there will be some people who believe that information. Thus, when it suggested that he be crucified, the multitudes joined in and demanded his death. It continues to amaze me that people can be motivated to become almost mob-like by somebody coming up and giving a rousing speech and so forth. But you find the same kind of shifting behavior, the same kind of waffling and unstable attitudes today that we found in the first century. The false witnesses sounded good to the blinded and the uninformed. Before the trial, the multitude that came with Judas, what did they come with? Swords and staves. What are staves? Anybody know? Clubs. And Jesus, he was maybe not surprised about that, but he does make an interesting statement. He said he'd come out against a thief. Some translations will say robber. I think that's kind of interesting. That implies that thieves or robbers were not looked on very kindly in that day and time, and people might approach them with swords and clubs. He made the point that I was the fellow who was with you, teaching daily in the temple. You didn't lay hold of me then. Why are you doing so now? What would have made these people turn against the Lord? Well, when we think about the wicked leaders, we know that they were bent on destroying him. As Jesus said in Luke 22, verse 53, the what of what has come. This is the time for the power of darkness. So Satan certainly was using great efforts, maybe his maximum effort, to destroy the Lord. The Lord knew these things all along. Back in Mark chapter 8, verse 31, he said, the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected. The elders, the chief priests, the scribes, they were not going to accept him, at least for the most part. He was going to be killed, and after his death, he would rise again 3 days later. Some quick points here, 7 quick thoughts, and then we'll wrap it up. The rejection of the Lord will be more vivid and meaningful if we consider some things. The multitude, which was once attentive to his teaching, had been poisoned by prejudicial leaders, and that's right. Those leaders were able to turn the tide against him. The apostles, even they, forsook him and fled for their lives. False witnesses were used to testify against him. The council said he was worthy of death. He was guilty. He was bound like a common criminal and led before Pilate. He had done no wrong. The Jews would not agree to releasing him, so an insurrectionist and murderer was released in his place. And then, of course, he was mocked in the various ways that are described in the Bible.